Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe,
Ashe,
Ashe. Welcome to Sign of Times, everyone. Queen Sire, Sign of the Times is brought to you by UAC, the United African and New Power Radio Network. Began the UAC at the end of July 2013. And we ask that you continue to support us and our sponsors. And Raising Culture, I'm a co-host on Wednesday nights, Dr. James Jones. You can find on Dr. Amira Sankofa Kweli. You can find Dr. Amira on Facebook, Dr. Amira Sankofa Kweli, as well as Ask Life Coach Ministries. And you can give her a call at area code 502-208-9142. And last but not least, we want to always remember to never forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the families and loved ones and friends that they represent. So please reach out to Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement, and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively, on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at freealabamamovement.com and freeohiomovement.org. So I just want to take a moment to thank everyone for all the well wishes and prayers that have gone out for our beloved brother, King Dati. He's been a longtime supporter of Sign of the Times, New Power Radio Network, and everything we've done through the UAC. And I definitely could not continue to do this work without his continued support and love and dedication to not only us, but the people as a whole. This is a righteous brother, if I ever met one, one of the strongest men I've ever met in my life and had the pleasure of knowing. And so I just want to thank everybody for sending us positive energy and well wishes as we are on this journey together. And united we stand and divided we fall. And to quote my beloved brother, King Dati, it's freedom or death and ain't nothing else. So, again, I just want to thank everybody for all the love and calls and texts and prayers and outreach that we received in support of our beloved brother, because, like I said, he is definitely a warrior and he's definitely a soldier. So continue to send us love, send us positive energy because the healing process is still taking place. But we're going to go ahead and claim that victory because we know that this is a brother who definitely deserves it. So, and we need him in the movement and everything that we do in whatever capacity that he's willing to serve in. We definitely need him to continue to be a part of the Sign of the Times family and the communal family and the freedom movement because he's definitely a soldier. And, you know, you all have heard me talk about Dati even when he was in solitary confinement. I refuse to allow people to forget about him. And you know, I refuse to allow that to happen now. So we love you, King Dati, and everything that we do on Sign of the Times is because of you. And we couldn't have done it without you. So thanks for the love, everybody. So tonight we have on with us Decarcerate Louisiana. I'm going to go ahead and open up another one of our consistent callers, Sister Linda, before we get tonight's dialogue started. Greetings, Sister Linda. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. It's nice to hear your voice. I'm trying to been on it for a long time. How you doing, my brother?
Yeah, he's not in queue yet. The brother from Decarcerate Louisiana is on with us tonight. I'll go ahead and open up his mic so you can greet him. Greetings, brother. Can you hear me? Lonzo?
Yeah, I'm
leaving. Okay, you're breaking up. Mother Linda said hello.
I think there's something wrong with your mic or whatever, because when you came on, it was breaking up.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes. How you doing, my brother?
Yeah, I'm doing all right or whatnot behind enemy lines, but we got a lot of things that we're working on. We went through a strike last Tuesday, so we're definitely pushing the needle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get it live in a living color here on Sign of the Times. You know that, Mama Linda.
Well, I know that, but see, I know I hadn't been on in quite a while. It's been a lot of months since I hadn't been on because I have to keep on forgetting.
What you been up to?
Between here and the hospital, I'm still trying to make it.
You were in the hospital?
Yeah, I collapsed when I went to my clinic appointment. That was Monday.
Oh, wow. What, you got too hot?
Yeah. Yeah, I got overheated. I was sweating and everything. They took me to the ER. My BP was down very low.
You been eating right?
Of course I eat right.
Okay.
My health is the most important thing in this world. I'm not ready to go yet.
Well, we ain't ready for you to go either.
No, I'm going to say it like this. What days are you on? Wednesdays and Thursdays or Wednesday to Friday?
For the summertime, I think we're going to change up our schedule and be Wednesday through Friday, at least for the short time coming.
Oh, but you got to post that on my page so that way I would know because my brains don't work like it used to.
Okay, I'll be sure to tag you and remind you when we get ready to come on.
Yeah, because when I went to your page and seen that you was on yesterday, and I think you told me you was going to be there yesterday, but I forgot.
That's okay. You always
so
put up in spirit.
Yeah, I took a chance today. And also, I had called you and text you. Okay? So I had to let you know that. Queen T. Now, did the brother come back yet?
Yes, ma'am.
So I could say hello to him?
Yeah,
yes, he's here.
It's been a long time since I heard your voice. Having it.
He's a new host, Mother Linda. I don't think you've met Brother Alonzo before.
No, that's not the one that used to be saying, I sell, you know, along with you.
No, ma'am, this is a different brother. He's in Louisiana.
Oh, my bad. How you doing, my
That's
brother?
Okay.
It's okay or whatnot. I said I'm doing all right or whatnot, organizing a big work stoppage we had earlier this last week or whatnot. So we've been kind of busy working with that, not going out in that field, slaving like dogs.
Just like the old days. Besides, well.
Yeah.
So Queen T.
Yes, ma'am.
Lisa, I'd like to know I'm still here. And I gotta keep in mind, you know, because I mean I was so used about the Tuesday, so now I gotta deal with Wednesdays and Thursdays, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I wanna say it was nice meeting you and tell Dr. James Jones that I say yellow.
Yes, ma'am, I sure will. You take care of yourself and stay out of that heat.
I put it like this. With all this rain we got going, it was nice. I just had the windows open. Now I got cloudy again. I had to close it back down. So it's one thing, and it gets hot up in here. But I put it like this. I don't want to have no electrical problem. When it rains, if I'm living on the top floor, I get, you know, near the sky, I'll get all that water, and I don't need that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Cause especially when it started, when it had thunderstorm, with the lightning and all that. When the last time we had that thunderstorm, the lightning bolt hit my window bars. But I had my shades pulled down because I do not mess with no lightning.
I know that's right.
That's it. So. At least I let you know I'm still alive. You know, but what is that in the background?
Yeah, he might have some background noise. Well, thank you, Mother Linda, for calling. And I'll hit you up later on in the week and let you know what the broadcasts are going to be coming up next week.
Okie dokie. So y'all take care. Like I said, tell everybody that Miss Linda said yellow.
Okay,
okay,
we will. Okay.
Is Miss Linda to you? My brother.
It's nice.
What?
Said it was nice also to get an opportunity to meet you.
You're breaking up there. Check your
he said it's nice to meet you.
It was also a good opportunity
to meet. Breaking up. You got to check your circuits, okay?
Yeah, I was saying that it was nice to meet you, too. It was nice getting the opportunity to meet you, sister.
Likewise, my brother.
All right, stay in the fight with us.
Always do, man, even though I haven't been on since last year. I just got going through a lot of things right now. So I'll try to call in next week, okay? Same time,
okay.
Same station.
Yes,
peace
ma'am.
Peace out.
Yes.
Peace out.
Peace out. Yeah.
I say. Welcome, Brother Alonzo. We're excited to get an update from Decarcerate Louisiana. First, please introduce what is Decarcerate Louisiana and what has been going on since the last time you all were on Sign of the Times.
All right. First off, Decarcerate Louisiana is a movement. Was a movement created inside of Angola, and it's been spread out all over the world. And our movement is about liberating black people and people of color. And our movement is to expose the lies and the crookedness or whatnot of the snakes that pretend like they're for justice, but they're just the opposite. So, like I said, you can go on our Facebook page at Decarcerate Louisiana, and you can look us up. Matter of fact, ours will probably be the first to pull up before you even incarcerate. So you can go on there. You can join us now. And we have our website, decarcerate.com. Decarcerate Louisiana.com. And you can go on to that site and you'll be able to connect to us. But since the last time we was on the show, we had staged the workshop and whatnot. So the whole field, about 50 guys, didn't go out to work. In the process of that, one of these devils, which is the assistant warden, Volker, the one that has a rape charge launched against him for raping rape, I believe it was his in-laws or whatnot. But he comes with a stick and threatens us. So he got an altercation with two inmates. Him and Major Roscoe got in an altercation with two inmates. Our brother stood their ground or whatnot because they was instigating by calling us N-words and things of that nature. Just to try to get us out there, because we haven't been going on strike. We have been striking for the last 4 to 5 months anywhere or not, but just time that they put the warden and all of them over there trying to make us go out there in the field. So, like I said, our field work is like a lot of manual work, similar with the Hispanics, the Latinos do or whatnot, in field work or whatnot, but it's very exhausting, and we're asking for real rehabilitating programs. We're asking for the change of the natural life census laws. That's a part of our demand. And we got the industrialized workers of the world behind our supporting our movement. We got Sister Tahira supporting our movement or not. And anything else you need me to fill in on, Sister Tahira?
Yes. Help the listeners to understand what exactly do you mean by that this movement is spreading all over the world, and who were some of the people who helped lay the foundation for this to even be able to take place in 2018?
Some of the people that laid the foundation is Ryan Brooks. He's the president of the organization, Decarcerate Louisiana. Malik the God, he laid the firm work for this. This is the social media page that we have. We've been working on that for the past year. And we got when we say that it's been a nationalized, we're connected with the world. And the world has seen Louisiana crooked justice system for what it is. So we've been having all of the wardens and the guys that was a part of jumping on a guy. They're no longer in the camp no more. They're moving them. They can run, but they can't hide. So we had an interview with the Advocate newspaper. So they subpoenaing all of the cameras because they got body cameras. So they're subpoenaing all of the cameras as we speak. So like I say, things is definitely moving in the right direction or whatnot. It cannot be any greater. And like I say, we got people calling Louisiana Secretary of Correction. LeBlanc, they're calling him from all over the world, pressuring him letting them know that we know that this is a, Angola is a slave plantation. It has absolutely nothing to do with penal reform, a prison reform, rehabilitation. So, like I said, we're not right now. We got our movement, that classmate, not cellmate, is based on is based upon the report that was done by Eric Holding and Mr. Duncan, who was the Secretary of Education. So, what we're generally doing, we're lobbying our support behind our group, classmate, not cellmate. And basically that report is saying that the state is spending large amount of money, unnecessary money at that, on corrections, dealing with the nepotism and the cloninism and things of that nature, where the guy's assistant district attorney in Baton Rouge, his wife is over Prison Enterprise, and that's a money-making wing of DOC. So like I said, we're putting this journalism down, unadulterated journalism. You will never hear this on no other talk show that give you the leeway to expose the corruption is within the system. So, like I said, is Malik on the other lines, Tahira?
No, I don't see anybody else in queue.
All right, or not. But like I said, anything else you need me to comment on?
Yeah, plenty. When you speak on not going out to work in the field, what industries are impacted by the work that you all do in Louisiana?
The whole state of Louisiana is impacted. Whenever you have state inmates doing the vegetables, things of that nature, that feeds the whole state of Louisiana, DOC facilities and other facilities outside of the state. So us not going to work is definitely put a strain on the system, and it lets the system know that we're the one that's running it. They're not running anything. We go in the field for 2 cents an hour, which is slave labor, 2 cents an hour. And half of the guys don't even get that because they rob them out of their incentive pay. They take that. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to let the world know really what it is and how much of power that we would hold, how much of power we hold with the very social media in today's society.
Yes, and it's exciting to see the work that the Free Alabama Movement, the FAM3, and us as supporters, it's exciting to see it be expanded and not co-opted, which oftentimes happens by we get our good movements co-opted by organizations that don't necessarily have the same motives as we do, especially being African descendants. So can you talk about the impact, if you will, that this could potentially have for other organizations who were in the forefront of putting this kind of movement and strike and efforts collectively, getting those started around the world?
Yeah, I believe that the movement that we're doing or whatnot, and you can take an example or not, this is exactly what we did. We made sure that we had our supporters in line in society first so they could control the narration or whatnot. Because the way the DOC is being ran or whatnot is being ran where they have is running through a bureaucracy. They have several wards, system wards, and things of that nature. So they really confuse themselves that they can't get out the type of statement that they need because you got too many chiefs and no Indians. So that was one of the things that we was able to take advantage of on that or whatnot and make sure that our press get out or whatnot. But if anybody's willing in other different states across the world or whatnot, if you're participating, we need to demand that prison labor stops. No, we need to be in classrooms. If you say rehabilitation, if it has absolutely nothing to do with rehabilitation, it has absolutely nothing. So, So what we're trying to do, we're trying to galvanize support or whatnot. We have us a GoFundMe page set up or whatnot so we can purchase us a silk screen machine so we can start producing campaign logos on T-shirts. So, like I said, you can go to Decarcerate Louisiana. You can go to that site on our group page. We also have a link to that site on our group page. Our So you can also go on to that and contribute, because it's significant that we get monetary to contribute so we can move forward and go on with the things that we're doing. And money is an asset. These guys that we're up against and whatnot, they have millions of dollars, billions of dollars and whatnot. But we're gifted by us having the social ability through social media that we can lay up there and we can be able to have our first heard, and we can raise a decent enough of funds to support our cause.
Ashe, and so what are the fields that the workers in Louisiana work in?
You can say that again, Sister Tayo.
What are the areas that the brothers are refusing to go to work in? You said that they are actually on field, on farmland. Is that true? And what type of farmland are they harvesting and working in?
They're working in on, like right now, they got I believe they got carrots. They have broccoli. They have carrots, broccoli, things of that nature. Anything that harvests around the winter time, the summertime, and so all of that has been okra. The okra fields are probably the worst fields because you have guys that's been in that okra, and the okra about 10 feet tall. So just imagine you're in okra that tall when you can't even breathe. So, like I said, whatnot, they have absolutely no interest in rehabilitating us in here. And right now, we're able to expose everything to the world. And even the press director of DOC or whatnot, she couldn't even explain why we was going on strike. But based on us having formats like Tahira show or not, it gives us the ability where we can talk out loud and we can expose. That's brother Malik right now. I'm going to try to get him on the line to tap in.
Okay.
Okay, Sister Queen?
Yeah.
I'm on this Ryan, president, organizer, and founder of Decarcerate Louisiana.
Ashe, welcome, Brother Ryan. So tell us, please introduce yourself. I think this is your first time on Sign of the Times. Is that true?
Yes, it is.
So please talk about who you are and what inspired you to start Decarcerate Louisiana.
Okay.
I'm back or whatnot.
All right. Hey, brother Cal Casino, this Ryan.
Yeah, I'm back. What's happening, Ryan?
All right. I'm just going to talk a little bit about Decarcerate Louisiana and what our movement is about. All right. What, first of all, the name of our organization is Decarcerate Louisiana. And what inspired me to found this movement is when I started to learn about slavery, and I started to see the relationship that antebellum slavery had with convict leasing, and then convict leasing with the prison farms that we have right now today in this country. And so once I learned that and saw that relationship, I said, wow. I mean, slavery is still here. Slavery never stopped existing. It just modified itself. It just evolved. It evolved from what we saw from the 1600s to 1865, and that was chattel slavery from that period. And then what happened was we saw another evolution of slavery, which took place from 1867 to 1941. And this form of slavery was called convict leasing or peonage. So from that period, and we had a system in place, what was called Jim Crow segregation. So during that period, the slave masters at that time and owners of companies like railroad industries, mining companies, farms, and what have you, sheriffs, politicians, bails, finance people, all these people got together and start to figure how could they maintain their wealth, how could they maintain control over the African American population? So what they did was, when the slaves were released off the slave plantation, and because the 13th Amendment said that slavery is abolished for commission of a crime, what these guys did was, the South at that time, they began to start figuring out, well, they went back to the drawing board and started to figure out, how can we put blacks back in slavery? And so with the 13th Amendment giving them the right to do that, if they have been duly convicted of a crime, the slave masters started investing more of their time and resources into politics, into running for governor. And you know, running for state, the state senate, so that they can position themselves in the local government, state government, and federal government, so that way they will be able to exercise enormous control over the African American community. So what happened was, is that we started seeing what was called black holes. They started targeting the slaves, and they already had and fixed penalties for certain offenses like vagrancy or looking at a white woman the wrong way or whistling at a white woman or talking loud in public places. Just petty minor stuff like that. They will apprehend the newly released slaves and they will bring them to court. They would arrest them and bring them to court and charge them with these false offenses, these little offenses they draw it up with. And they would set a bond at a price that they knew the defendant couldn't afford. And so an owner of a railroad company or some kind of farming company or what have you would step up and post bail on behalf of the black defendant in exchange for the agreement that the black defendant would work for the owner of such and such company for X amount of years. And so that went on all the way from 1867 to 1941. And so World War II being on a horizon at this time, and Japan was like sending word to African American leaders, was communicating with them, letting them know that they shouldn't get involved in this war. I'm sorry, hold on. So, okay, I'm back. So what happened was that they hold on, I'm sorry, hold on.
No worries. Take your time.
Okay, I'm back. I'm sorry. I just had to step aside for a few moments. Okay, so I'm talking about slavery, and I'm showing the relationship between antebellum slavery and the relationship with a new form of slavery, which was called convict leasing, that took place from 1867 to 1941. So, okay. And during this period, I want to pick up where I left off at. Okay, so this group of slave traffickers, the sheriffs, the judges, the bail bondsmen people, the politicians, all of them had begun to set up a system that would re-enslave black Americans. And that's how they did it. They did it through these black codes, through the Jim Crow segregation, and it was easy for them to do it because with segregation being legal, they was easily able to target blacks for these petty offenses and then lock them up and put them back in slavery. So So, again, Germany, during World War II, Japan had begun to start communicating with African-American leaders and showing them how slavery still existed in the South, and why should you be involved in a war? Why would you want to help a country that's oppressing you? And so, according to Douglas Blackman in his book, Slavery by Another Name, The Reenslavement of Black Americans from the Civil War to World War II, he shows that it was only because of the United States being put in a precarious position at that time that made Franklin D. Roosevelt tap the Justice Department and send the U.S. Attorney General Francis Biddle at that time to the Southern states to investigate slavery. And once he began to investigate slavery, all this stuff started popping up. And so eventually, slave traffickers started to receive indictments. And they broke up that whole convict leasing system there. But right after they did that, another thing took place, which is called the Get Tough on Crime movement. And according to Robert Purvis in his book, Set Yourself, The Rise of the American Empire, we see that there was the persecution and oppression of African Americans was still on, but it changed. It evolved from convict leasing to get tough on crime laws. And with poverty being such a big problem in the African American community, which was created by the government, it created a lot of desperation, a lot of despair, a lot of hopelessness, a lot of struggle in a black community. And so by the desperation, levels began to rise and build. People became desperate to want to take drastic measures to do anything they could to feed themselves, to take care of their families. So we saw witnessing in the 60s, a lot of domestic violence erupted in the urban communities at that time in this country. And we also saw that Barry Goldwater, he was the first one, I believe, that according to Robert Perkins, that started talking about this Get Tough on Crime movement, where the focus was more on not looking for a solution to solve the crime, but just focusing on people's fears of crime, people's emotions and stuff like that. And the Republicans, they was able to steal the spotlight, because if we recall at that time, Lyndon Baines Johnson had a Great Society program going, and he set up a task force called the Turner Commission, and they were tasked with finding out the root cause of the crime, why it was happening. And the Turner Commission produced reports that it was not like black people was just out looking for nothing more but to get in trouble. But they was it was a lot of stress. It was a lot of desperation. It was poverty that was causing the domestic violence, and it was steady building so that people became desperate, and they just began to start finding ways that they could cope and survive. So if the drugs was easily available, people were doing that. So the Great Society was an anti-crime poverty program created in LBJ's administration, where the funding, the focus was on solving crime in a way that would be preventive, such as investing more in education, investing more in job training programs, the different resources and things that it would take for people to thrive. But with so much of his attention being diverted to Southeast Asia with the Vietnam War going on at the time, Barry Goldwater was able to steal the spotlight. And so George Wallace picked up on the ball and began to just talk about crime in a way that would play on people's fears and emotions. And so Nixon caught the ball and ran all the way to the White House with it. And with that, he got in office. He started investing more in law enforcement and jails and prison construction. So Reagan come in, and Reagan took up that somewhere along the line and took up the same agenda and was sending money to the states to continue the process of building more jails and prison and investing in law enforcement. So we saw prison expansion constantly expand in this country from so few Americans behind bars to now we had 2.4 million Americans, the highest incarceration rate in the world. And so it was a Get Tough Crime movement that was also carried on by these different administrations, Clinton as well. And so the new slavery that we're seeing is criminal justice. It's a Get Tough on Crime movement. And this is what's causing mass incarceration in this country. And it's not solving the problem. People are still in fear of their lives right now. And what we see is the solution of crime is to incarcerate. Invest more in community. Invest more in higher education. Invest more in job training programs, economic development, prenatal care, daycare centers. And you want to connect people. You want to bring people more into the system. You want to invest in people and bring them more in. But if we're not investing so that we have poverty, light ballrooms and liquor stores on every corner, then people are not connected. People are not connected. We there's a lack of educational economic opportunities for people to have more to be incorporated, to feel a part of the system, and being productive in this nation and for their community. And so that's the third phase of slavery. I was able to show listeners the evolution of slavery from antebellum slavery to convict leasing to now mass incarceration. And again, it was the 13th Amendment that allowed all of this to take place, because even though it said that slavery was being abolished, it also the next clause was that except if a person has been duly convicted of a crime. So it allowed unscrupulous public officials and leaders in the corporate world to be able to interact with lawmakers to see what could be done to maintain the system of slavery, the system of working people for free, the forced labor system. And it seems that they have been having success. And right now, slavery has never changed. It's still here, right here with us today. And our movement sees that, and we want to fight against that. We want to abolish this new slavery that we see. And we want to get people, students, workers, we want to get the American people to see the evolution of slavery, to see what it looked like. From the 1600s to 1865, and then from 1867 to 1941, and from post World War II to 2018 today, and if people can see that relationship, the connection, just how slavery evolved, then I would believe that people would be shocked, people would feel hurt. And people will protest against it. It's right here before our eyes. It's just that we need to wake the people up and have more awareness out there so that people can see it. And once people see it, I'm sure that they will do the right thing and that they will call it what it is. Mass incarceration today and slavery by another name.
Ashe, thank you for that historic analysis of you know, what we know today as mass incarceration and over prosecution, especially of melanated people. And so as you were going through the history, one of the things that
stuck out the most is that regardless of how ill we've been treated as a community, we've always maintained a certain status of wanting to be good citizens, so to say, continuing to pay taxes, continuing to send our children to the public school system, continuing to want to, quote-unquote, go to college and get, quote-unquote, good jobs. We've continued to participate in our own oppression. So what do you have to say to the community to let them know that this is truly the case, that we are not being looked after or looked at as even anything other than still chattel to a lot of the, especially corporate America that exists nowadays? And I yield.
Go ahead, brother.
Why you gonna answer that?
Yeah, I would say to the community that the struggle is still on. The struggle that our forefathers have been part of in this country, the movement for human rights and human dignity, is still on. Our struggle for jobs and justice is still as compelling as it was in the 60s and the 70s and even in earlier periods. And so I mean, they are people that might wanna, they're having some success, and that they wanna say that, or even pretend to they don't see the problem, they don't see the racial disparities, they don't see the setup, you know. But we see it, and we know that there's other brothers out there. That's conscious, other brothers and sisters that see the oppression, the systemic racism, the system of white supremacy. And so it's very much alive today as it was when Malcolm was here, when the old Black Panther Party of the 60s and the 70s. And even when our brother Marcus Garvey was on the scene, the racism is still present. It's just that it's more subtle nowadays, and you see it more. You have to know your rights. You have to know that for instance, like, take the preamble to the United States Constitution, which says that we, the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, provide for the common welfare, do ordain and establish this United States Constitution. We can go into the urban areas where a lot of Black people are, and we can look at the conditions there and not see a perfect union. I mean, we can look at those conditions. We can look at our schools and see how underfunded and understaffed it is. The same thing with our hospitals, and we could see the shoddy plan in our community, in the areas where our people are at. We could see that the planners and developers and the people that play a role in developing towns, certain districts, and what have you. We could see that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right, yeah. Excuse me. May I interrupt? I said, Sister Tahira Malik is trying to call in now. You can't get in. Think you can call him on? Get ready to put him on.
Sure. I can try to call him. Hold on. But you two go ahead and dialogue, and I'll pull him in.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So. The struggle again is the racism, the system of white supremacy is still on. It's just more subtle nowadays, and it has evolved to become something more conniving, something more that tries to be that tries to act friendly towards us and deceive us and make us think that we're all in this together. But the more and more we become conscious of our rights, the legal system that's set up and how it's supposed to function, the Constitution, then we could see that there's a race struggle. We could see the inequality in this country, in this nation. And so we want to study the system. We want to keep our eyes and ears open to learning more about this system, also learning more about who we are and where we come from, and that we are here not to just exist. We were born to have some say, have an important say over our lives, not just over the home, our home, but to write the rules that controls the process of how we become homeowners. Being positioned ourselves so that we can be in position to control the rules and the process of how we become owners of land. And we want to position ourselves in such a way to not at the only become owners of land, but we able to write the rules to be able to control the land and the wealth that we have. So that's very important to leadership. That's very important to our success as black people, as American people, as human beings, wherever we at on the face of this earth. You know, so knowledge, I encourage our community, our brothers and sisters to keep getting knowledge, to keep networking with people that have knowledge, and to keep aspiring to greatness. Stay connected with people that really care about your welfare, that's concerned about you as an individual, and as well as concerned about our growth and our evolution in this country as a whole.
Ashe, for anyone who is listening on your phone, you can push 1 if you would like to come into the conversation. If you're listening on your computer, you can dial in at 917-889-8059, 917-889-8059. I just tried to reach Brother Malik, and it's saying that his line is unavailable. I got a pre-recorded recording, so I can't get through.
All right,
okay.
We'll pick up on the next time we see on the
show. Ashe. So where are we headed from here, brothers? I know that currently there is an existing stand down, if you will. Brothers are refusing to go work in the crops and to their normal assignments, if you will. Where are we going from here? And are you asking that those who are on the outside also choose those products that the brothers are working on to target for a boycott? And I yield.
Yeah, right now we're working on another work stoppage. We're going to broaden it out, not just to sell Blacksland population. So we're working on getting the word around. But one of the things that we need to be mindful of that we need the backing of society also, because if we can't control the narration or not, it won't be worth our battle. So we want y'all to lay up that we send any numbers, or you can call the Secretary of Education, Duncan, and blow up his phone. And
he dropped off, brother.
Oh no,
brother Ryan, he dropped off. Can you go ahead and give out the information and contact the secretary?
Okay, hold on just one second, please.
Okay.
I'm like this.
Hey, Sister Tahira, I'm back. Could you give me that last question again?
Yeah, I have the information here. In a report that came out on May the 10th, Decarcerate Louisiana released a live on-the-ground report that spoke about the assault that was made against inmate Floyd Jefferson by Major Bernard and Lieutenant Davis. At that time, they were asking people to call the secretary, James M. LeBlanc, and his mailing address is P.O. Box 94304, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 70804-9304 is the zip code, and the phone number to the secretary of prisons in the state of Louisiana is 225-342-6740. Also, the physical address for Angola Prison is 504 Mayflower Street, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 70802. The fax number to where you can reach the secretary, James M. LeBlanc, is area code 225-342-3095. Again, these brothers' platform is extensive. It's almost up to 15 demands at this point, and they include the fact that not only are they not being educated and rehabilitated, but they also are advocating on behalf of the future generations of children who I'm sure the Department of Corrections in the state of Louisiana is relying on for their next phase of oppression, if you will. But we cannot allow that to happen. So the further we get this agenda along, the further we get their demands along, the more people that can hear what it is that they say that they're about, the more support overall we're going to have as a nation, a group of people. We know that disproportionately African Americans are affected by this issue more so than any other group of people, howsoever. This is not only our fight, it is the American fight, if you will, because it's been said and even quoted in the Constitution and other documents that once the government no longer represents the best interests of the people, it is up to the people to form a new government. And so while these brothers may be confined physically, they definitely are not confined by the things that they have in mind and the goals and objectives and the vision they have for the betterment of not only themselves but the overall community as a whole. And so, brother, you know, one of the things that I found out in looking at the history of Angola is that Angola has deep ties to not only current slavery, legalized slavery, what we know now as mass incarceration, but it also has actual history to the slave movement of the true antebellum South. What I found, it says, is Louisiana State Penitentiary, also known as Angola, is a notorious symbol of the dehumanizing incarceration of blacks in the 20th century, and and that practice is linked to slavery. Originally a slave plantation on the banks of the Mississippi River, Angola grew into a brutal privately owned prison that leased out convicts and forced laborers after the Civil War. The state took over the operation in 1901, not with an eye to return, but to reaping big profits, said Burke Foster, a former professor of criminal justice, who has just written a history of Angola. Cruel and squalid, Angola often inflicted worse suffering than was endured by slaves. And according to the historians, these things have not changed. And so this is a fight that's not based on any sort of emotionalism, any sort of demands that is anything other than than humane. These brothers want to be treated as though they are truly man, they are truly a part of the society, and most of all, that they haven't been forgotten. So I yield back to you, brothers, and all mics are open that have pushed one, and I yield.
Right on, sir. So good evening, everybody. Malik online.
Good evening, Malik.
How y'all doing?
Ready.
President Ryan, you online?
Yeah, I'm online.
Oh, we're going to listen to you, President. Sister Queen Sahira, are you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm waiting on you.
Okay, so brother Conrad Malik is on now. Yeah, we're waiting on you, huh? All right, I'm here.
Welcome, Brother Malik.
How y'all doing? Welcome, sir. Thanks for having me on the show. Who y'all wanted to speak?
So you have questions, Sister Queen Sahira?
I don't have any questions. I just came in. I was trying to get in on the show, and I was having difficulty with the communication. So I'm just trying to listen in. I'm trying to catch up to see what y'all talking about right now.
Well, we just
The last question I asked had to do with continuing the boycott outside of the physical form of the penitentiary itself. For example, one of the things that we did with the Free Alabama Movement was target McDonald's. We targeted Walmart. We targeted Wendy's. We targeted Victoria's Secret and quite a few other businesses that had a direct benefit to continuing to enslave our brothers and sisters. And so I know that earlier Brother Alonzo mentioned some of the crops and things like that are farmed on these plantation fields and farms. But what can we do to support the boycott? Are there companies, are there particular things that are being manufactured in the state of Louisiana that we could continue to target outside? And I yield.
One of the things that the people can do to help us and now assist with the work, the ongoing work stoppage, is to continue to call the governor of the state of Louisiana, Governor Val Edwards. This man have a platform in which his vision is to cut down the prison population by at least 8,500 inmates before you leave office. You've been in office 2 years. So we asked the people from all over America to call in and Governor John Bell Edwards and call it the state capitol and make the complaint. Let them know that we know that legalized slavery still exists inside of Louisiana State Penitentiary. And the guys, their eyes are open now, and guys, practically, they just ain't going through it no more. Ever since the work stoppage took place, we've seen a change. We're starting to see a gradual change right here in the main prison. These guys haven't been to work. It's like the administration is shook or something. They don't know where to stand. They don't know what to do. They don't know whether to call work call. They don't know what to do. So a lot of people got removed out of their positions. Some of the ranking officers coming now.
Okay, I'm up here last with Sister Queen to hear until Conrad Malik get back. So what we want to do is we would like the public to follow us on Facebook. We at facebook.com/incarceratelouisiana. We at twitter.com/incarceratela. And we have incarceratelouisiana.blogspot.com. So we would like people to follow us on social media, to tell their friends and family members about the struggle, about the movement, and to pay attention to us, to keep up with our struggle, and we have flyers and brochures that we have online. So we also are trying to connect with students and colleges and universities in the state of Louisiana as well as throughout the country. And so we would like to connect with our students in the country and have our flyers and brochures distributed on campus. So that's as I understand, there are some concerns on college campuses about the impact that mass incarceration have on African Americans in this country. So we just want to let students know that there's awareness and concern that's steady growing and building on a daily basis inside the prison too. So we are concerned. We are looking into it. We're building movements, and we would like to connect with people on the outside, students, workers, organizers, and activists, whether they're in the tennis rights group, the disabled rights group, the LGBTQ community, you know, because there's, again, we all live in this country. We all Americans. We all, in some form or fashion, striving for human rights and human dignity to live like human beings in this country and on this earth. So this not just about us. This our movement to decarcerate, it's not just about prisons. One of the main features, again, is community reinvestment. So that's the best way to be able to fight crime. And when we put money more into our schools, we're saying that we are in solidarity with the students. We don't want higher education to be cut to send money more money to the military or more money to law enforcement. We want to see our people connected and learning and growing and sharing and building together. And so that's what community is. That's the concept of community. Learning, sharing, growing, and building together. So there it is. We in solidarity with if you're a human being, we support the movement and a cause for human rights and human dignity. So we just wanna let people know that this is just not a prisoner's rights movement because we're for us to say that we want community reinvestment, that says that we believe in crime prevention. That says that there's a way to reduce recidivism. We believe that there's a way. We know that there's a solution. And to say that we want to decarcerate, we're saying that community reinvestment is a better way to solve our problems, and it's also showing people that we care and that we are in this together. We part of the same struggle. So,
you and I, we had this conversation before, brother, and I just have to ask you, like, how much of your agenda is from Decarcerate Louisiana, and how much of your agenda is being influenced by other organizations who support you?
It's definitely being influenced by the Brothers in California, the Men of 13th movement, and the Free Alabama movement in Alabama. And every group, every organization that's out there that's putting out awareness like Critical Resistance, the Bayview newspaper, local Black Press newspapers, all that is what is having an influence in terms of prisoners in Louisiana joining together with the broader struggle for human rights and human dignity, for not just Black people, but for our friends, our allies, all humanity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hold on. I'm going to go ahead and get any closing remarks that Brother Malik and Brother Alonzo may have. I'm going to go ahead and open up the mic. If you're not speaking, can you please mute your phone so we won't have so much background noise? I appreciate it. And then it offers an opportunity for those who are listening to the recording to hear it more clearly. So I appreciate your support and your help with that. And I yield.
All right. Yeah, Queen, this Malik the Guard, and I'd like to reiterate a couple of points that President Ryan made. I agree with him wholeheartedly 100% because we don't want to just put the pitch out there that we just some prison rights advocate group or organization just based up on those principles. we're all for community reinvestment. We're very concerned about our black community, white community, Mexican community. It doesn't matter. You look at the logo of Incarcerate Louisiana. You have an enjoyment of different color nationalities of hands joining hands, one in one. So this is not just some one-sided or left-right radical organization that their plight is just to end mass incarceration. Mass incarceration.
Yeah,
we have to understand.
Yeah, I fully agree and support that position. But I'm gonna tell you, right. I'm gonna be honest with you. I hear a lot of influence from other groups in some of the things that you say and some of the things that you say that you're about. And historically, what happens to us is that we allow our agendas to get diluted because not everybody has the same goals and objectives and motivation in mind, even though on the surface it may appear that they do. And so let's continue to talk about this thing, you know, as we move forward. Because everything that you do must be strategic. And, you know,
exactly.
Whoever you choose to have your alliances with, you know, no matter where they are, no matter what platform they're on, and no matter who they interact with, when people see them, if they are representative of your organization and your platform, they're going to feel like whatever they're doing is the same agenda that you're pushing. So if they're known for being hypocrites in the community and you say that they're a part of your organization, then, you know, when they see them, they're going to think that your organization is hypocritical too. So, you know, my only advice before we get ready to close is be real strategic about who you
right.
say represents you, because everybody's
exactly.
motivation is not the same. And so with that being said, I'll go ahead and yield to you all for any closing remarks, and then we can touch bases between now and I guess the next time that we're set to have a broadcast, and I yield.
Okay, and President Ron, I'd like to see
yeah.
the community. I'd like to see more people in the community unite, take a stand against these big corporations like Walmart, because AT&T, some of these people are in direct sponsorship of prison industrial complex industry, and some of them are sponsored Securus or the phone plan, and right now there's a class action suit that exists against Securus and the prison industrial complex industry. So if these corporations support the more and more construction of building more and more prisons, we as a community need to take a stand and quit doing business with Walmart, especially when they're saying Walmart, you know, they suck up all the resources from these inner-city communities, and now you got an inner-city recreation department where kids struggling to buy uniform and cleats and tennis shoes and stuff like that. And these same families eat at Pizza Hut every other week, but they can't get a sponsorship. They can't get a check for them to buy a new wardrobe or nothing like that. Urban communities need to wake up and stop supporting all these big conglomerate corporations that are sucking up the resources inside the urban community and putting it right back into more prison destruction and privatized prison.
Yeah, and I just want to say in my closing, and just to touch on, just reflecting on the last thing that Sister Hero said about being strategic about the people we choose to pick to represent us and just being careful about who we link up with. And I agree with her, but I just want to add that if we look at the system of white supremacy and the way that I spoke about it earlier, if you look at the evolution of slavery in this country from all the way up to the present day, we see that this system has had no picks and chooses in terms of employees. It's employees, the people that is recruited into the system to help build this system and to help it further entrench its power. It just
even though whites make up a mass majority of this system and are the ones that run this system, they also are not turning down hiring blacks to help them to be able to dominate us and exercise enormous control over us and to even help them persecute and oppress us. So my understanding is that if there are any white people, there are white people that are suffering in this nation as much as we are. But if they're in the same boat with us, and if we can hire them and get them to help us, I don't think that we should turn that help down. I don't think that if the Latino community or the Asian community was in that position, in the same position with us, and they had some grievance against the system just as much as we had, and they wanted to network with us, then we should have a system in place just like they have a system in place. So they have a system in place to where if any employee, whether it's a white employee, a black employee, or whatever the case may be, if it's determined that the employee needs to be fired or they no longer need the employee for some other reason, they get rid of them. And so that's how I see it. You know, if there's anybody, you could be red, black, blue, green, whatever color you is. If you support our movement for human rights and human dignity, then I think that we should have some kind of system in place to be able to do the same as they're doing, to be able to interview these people, check these people out, look into them, and accept them. Well, I'm gonna say recruit them and place them in positions that they would be that they could help us to be able to build our organization and to be able to push back against this ongoing system of slavery and white domination in this country.
I agree with you, Christina.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. And don't misinterpret anything I'm saying. It's just that there's a big difference between having solidarity and having people who say that they represent your same cause. That's where I tell you that everybody's motivation is not the same. And everybody's solution, even though it's true that oppression really doesn't have any color boundaries. Howsoever, when we look at how, even going through what you spoke about, the history of slavery, we have been disproportionately affected where other groups of people, in ways that other groups of people, gays, pygmies, whatever group you want to, Latinos, whites, Asians, whatever group you want to pick, no other group has been subjugated to the same type of oppression that we have. So therefore, our solutions are not always going to be the same. The things that we deserve as far as reparative and restorative justice are not always going to be the same. And that's the issue. That's the point that I was more so trying to make. So I want to thank you, brothers, for coming on and for continuing this good fight. Again, if you want more information about Decarcerate Louisiana, please go to decarceratelouisiana.com. You also can visit them on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and I believe you all are on Instagram too.
I think we bought the Bill and Instagram account. We never had a chance to get around to it, but the suggestion was brought up. So we will have it.
Okay. And please support these brothers. And as we continue to build the national platform, as many of you know, back in January, we initiated the National Freedom and Justice Movement with the full love and support and endorsement of the Free Alabama Movement, who planted the seeds, if you will, of striking, of boycotting, like on the realms that we haven't seen since the Attica uprising. And so what we've done is targeted specific months for times where people won't visit the commissary, people won't necessarily make long-distance phone calls. You know, of course, if we're in the midst of battle, we have to do what we have to do. But we also, again, have to be strategic and remove the power in ways that they can truly understand. And that means vote, and that means controlling what they put in their pocket. when you start messing with people's income, when you start messing with their comfort zone, when you start meeting them in places that they're not expecting you, then you start to really get attention. And so I'm looking forward to continuing to support this Free Alabama movement, the Free Ohio movement, the Incarcerate Louisiana, the People's Platform for Equality and Justice, Redistribute the Pain, Unheard Voices, and other groups that have come to the table. But we have to be strategic about everything that we do, because just like you all are putting your lives on the line, those organizations and people who are out here on the street are no more free than you are, and we're putting our lives on the line too. So with love and mutual respect, keep up the good fight, keep up the good work, and know that Sign of the Times, Utah Radio Network, the National Freedom and Justice Movement, and the Free Alabama Movement also support you and have your back. And with that, I yield back to you. Do you have anything in closing?
I would like to just thank you for allowing us a chance to voice out to the public exactly what our platform is, so it don't be no misunderstanding and no preconceptions about what we represent.
Mm-hmm. Ashe. Well, keep up the good fight. Anytime you need us to go live, we're prepared to do that as well. So just let me know, and we'll keep pushing and promoting you all's agenda, and we're going to get this thing done by hook or crook. So I guess we'll see you all in 2 weeks.
No doubt.
All right, y'all. With that being said, we're going to go ahead and close out for the evening. If you need me, feel free to give me a call at area code 513-913-2691, 513-913-2691. You also can reach out to me on Twitter, at Queen Tahira, on Instagram, Queen_Tahira, and, of course, on Facebook, Queen Tahira New Power Radio Network, and, of course, Sign of the Times. Until tomorrow night, everybody, take care of yourself and take care of each other, because at the end of the day, we're strongest, the more united we can stand. So we'll see everybody tomorrow night. Salute.
All right. Peace, y'all. Word.
All right. Thanks for having us.
There has been a comprehensive attack on the black community here for years, for decades. And it's up to
angry rectification as a sacrificial iron wheel of Reverend Nathaniel Turner, pounding the pavement with troops swollen with prophetic indignation against all odds. It is the packed sales in the rest of 60s, making headlines on TV to voice prophetic grievances, not to tickle ears and appeasement, revolutionary statesmanship, as found embodied in General Toussaint Louverture on the shores of Haiti, setting political holes and ideological strongholds on who's capable, who is a conqueror, or more succinctly, who is also a man. We are called to continue in his legacy, unashamed to denounce political figures by name. Are we afraid and ashamed to lose tax exemptions if we truly preach in his name in America? And who is speaking prophetic truth to power and making our world a morally better place? These are my thoughts, not just for my tomorrow, but for our tomorrow. Future in our hands, ours for the taking, shaping, and making.